Hello and welcome to SourceCast episode number 15. I'm Joey Lombardi. This week we have two blogs worth of information to get through, which is good because the 2 weeks together sort of tell a complete story. We are going to continue to talk about CEO compensation, and we're going to talk about Dell's ongoing struggles to find money to purchase EMC. So let's start the show. I'm going to start off with Dell. Over the last 2 weeks on the blog, we've slowly been seeing and hearing about some issues that maybe Dell cannot raise the money to acquire EMC. They're running into problems. Last week's blog, there was an indication that there may be trouble, but now Reuters is actually claiming the commitment deadline on the $10 billion of prorata loans that is part of the $45 billion financing package that will allow Dell to purchase EMC has been extended due to slow orders. Reuters is claiming, via an unnamed source, that the Chinese New Year delayed the approval of the financial request from the foreign banks, and that was the main cause of the extension of the original February 10th date. Reuters is not expecting that the pro rata syndication will close until at least February 15th. Along those lines, I think this is a humorous quote, EMC lead director William Green stated that unless an act of God happens, this acquisition is happening. I don't know if it's wise to invoke the Almighty in a business deal, but let's see what happens. Michael Dell and Joe Tucci have gone on record to say that they would not raid VMware's cash holdings to help fund the acquisition, but investors are worried about that. We're going to continue to watch EMC and Dell. We're going to see what happens and what the mechanics are. Speaking of mechanics, Microsoft is dropping a bunch of data centers into the ocean. Why, you may ask? Microsoft's logic is that half of the world's population is located within 125 miles of coastlines. So data centers in the sea would reduce latency. There are also environmental reasons that they're doing this trial. Putting a data center in the ocean eliminates the need for cooling, and in the future, such centers would be co-located with offshore renewable energy sources. This is a zero-emissions situation, and people are interested in those sort of things, according to Microsoft. I know that sounded sarcastic, but I am actually interested in that. I think it's good that we're looking at potential green energy solutions to run our ever-growing technological demands and needs. I'm not going to lie to you. The undersea story was just a segue, so I could pick up the topic of Microsoft on the podcast. The big deal with Microsoft and the reason why I'm covering them is their emergence in the cloud space. They are the dominant number two in the cloud space behind Amazon. They're performing so well that their cloud revenues are responsible for a third of their profits right now. So considering that Microsoft has the dominant operating system on the planet, they have an emerging cloud platform, and I would say it's a steady number two, and the fact that they're open to open source puts them in a really good position for future growth. We've covered in previous blogs that Microsoft is absolutely trying to be cost competitive. They recently cut their cloud hosting fees by 37%. So they're making a play. They want to be number one. They don't want to be the solid second behind Amazon. They want to take over Amazon's position. And considering that Amazon really isn't making a profit on their cloud services right now, Microsoft may have a shot. An area where Microsoft is struggling, however, is in the mobile market. Microsoft has a new Lumia phone coming out, but the rumors are that this will be the last one. Their plan is to terminate the Lumia brand and focus on the Surface brand. That rumor seems to make sense because information is coming out that Microsoft has been laying off dozens of mobile workers in the recent weeks. But Microsoft isn't the only company that's having trouble. I think everyone was excited to see how HP was going to manage the split, but the true indication of performance over the last year is in the CEO's stock compensation. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise CEO Meg Whitman, her total pay dropped 13% last year in comparison to the year before. Her base salary of $1.5 million remained the same. However, she received a smaller bonus. Her non-equity incentive compensation declined to $2.5 million from $4.3 million the year before. Another area that's struggling is the business analytics and business intelligence market. All the larger firms like IBM, Oracle, and SAS, the knock on their software is that it's hard to configure and use. The smaller ones where the interfaces are easy to use, like Splunk and Tableau, their financials are not great, and there's concern that they're either going to be acquired or they may not be able to remain competitive. Gartner recently released another magic quadrant in the BI space, and Tableau, Quick, and Microsoft were the only ones that stayed in the leader section. IBM, SAS, SAP, MicroStrategy, TIBCO, they all fell into the visionary section, but they are indicating that their software is not easy to configure. And then factor in the Tableau software. Their stock plunged 35% on disappointing earnings last week. The company reported a 42% revenue growth with billings growth of 36%, compared to 64% and 54% in Q3 2015, respectively. The prior 2016 revenue outlook was $854 to $865 million. Another big data analytics firm, Teradata, is also suffering from the competition. The big data analytics market isn't taking off fast enough for Teradata, and smaller companies like HDS are entering the market, and they're increasing the competitive pressure. The strain of competition for Teradata has been hitting them in multiple areas. In October, Teradata announced that they would be selling off their marketing platform. This was due to increased competition in that area, the lack of funds to invest and make the tool more competitive, and less than desired performance in the market over the last year. The smaller firms are struggling to compete and to invest, and the larger firms are struggling to innovate. It sounds like a perfect storm for consolidation and acquisition, honestly. So I think, especially in that BI space, in the next year or two, we're going to see some very interesting consolidations and acquisitions. And now we'll shift over to some news that you can use. There were a few fun articles that I published on the February 10th post that I wanted to highlight. One specifically calls out, if you want to get stuff done, it's time to stop reading those motivational articles. We're like, yay, here's five ways you can get stuff done. And really, how to get serious about success and how to really buckle down. One of the first things that they mentioned is to stop watching television. And I'm 100% in agreement with that. A lot of my personal friends, when they see that I upload a podcast or write a blog post, they're always asking me, how do I have time to do this stuff? And I always tell them, I don't watch television anymore. I very rarely watch TV. When my wife is downstairs watching television, I'm usually on the computer reading an article or thinking of a post for the blog. So I'm constantly researching, and I think that is the absolute number one way to buy time. Another thing that they mentioned, and I actually have been doing this in the last year, is going to bed earlier. Now that sounds counterintuitive to the get more stuff done by being awake longer. But I've been finding myself falling asleep at like 8:30 when my son goes to bed. And it's awesome. I usually wake up around 5:30 in the morning. I feel refreshed. And once you get used to that schedule, you get a lot of stuff done. You can get a lot of stuff done in the amount of hours that you're awake. And the last one is social media. You can spend hours of time on Facebook and Twitter just, I don't know, looking at cat pictures. That's all solid pieces of advice. I actually agree with every single thing that that article says. If you want to be more productive and pick up a hobby, that's a surefire way to find time in your life to do it. There's another article that I saw from The Atlantic with the headline of being a go-getter is no fun. I don't agree with the article, and I mentioned this in the blog. If you want to advance in a career, especially in a corporate environment, my personal opinion is that you have to be the person that's constantly volunteering for new assignments, to differentiate yourself, to stretch yourself, to learn new skills and tasks, and to be considered as someone who is capable of doing new things and advancing. But that being said, there is one thing in the article that I did agree with and that I wanted to call out. Sometimes the go-getter, quote-unquote, can get frustrated because management doesn't appreciate the amount of time it takes to do something. And in my career over the last almost 20 years, that is a very astute observation. I guess the thing that I'm always wondering is when the transition starts to happen, when you're going from an individual contributor into a manager or a management role or a director or in leadership role, when you start to forget how long it takes to do an assignment and when you lose that perspective, and it happens to everybody, it happens to all of us, it happens to me when I give out assignments. I think it starts to happen when you stop doing those things directly and you start delegating those tasks. The more you do that, the less you remember how long it takes to even set up the data sets or whatever it is you're doing. Most likely, The reality of the situation is it's an ad hoc report or it's a presentation that someone's asking you to do, but it does take a while to get those things right. And the other piece of this, to add my own two cents, is that when you are given these assignments typically, it's usually in a fire drill. You usually have limited time to discuss the assignment with the person that's giving it. So you're not entirely in that person's head and really have the full scope of what they're looking for. So it's hard to guesstimate what the expected output is. As I've progressed in my career, and this is advice to some of the younger people that listen to the podcast, I have a very FDR, pragmatic approach to these sort of assignments. So it's nice when you have a leader that's willing to work with you in that, in the sense that I know that first thing that's going to come out of the gate is probably not going to be the thing that they're looking for. You try to always knock it out of the park, of course, and you try to come up with your best possible option, but I like to come up with alternatives and different views and different slants, and you try to make sense out of something in your own way. And regardless of what the assignment is, always try to make the output tell a story. It's not about slides. It's not about charts. You have a message that you want to get through. And sometimes it's overt. You want to beat someone over the head with, this will save you money or this will do X. But sometimes that presentation and that report is about a narrative. It's about a journey. It's about taking someone through the information and let them come to the same conclusion as you. So it's odd to talk about storytelling in a corporate sense, but it's an effective and valuable tool if you do it subtly and you're good at it. And by no means am I saying that I'm good at it, but I do try to make that happen. I always try to tell a narrative. I always try to, I call it inceptioning the ideas in people's heads. I always try to slip in information that'll help make the overall point. And one of the last things is to not overwhelm people with a lot of information. Some people like really dense presentations and slides. I think that in a visual sense, you have to let the presentation breathe a little bit and make the apparent and obvious information that you want to broadcast easy to absorb and consume. I didn't mean to drill down that deep into presentations, but I do think it's important because that's something that, again, a lot of us that work in corporate America have to do. To summarize, try to tell a story, try to keep it clean, and try to make the obvious points pop out on the page. And for the leaders, directors, and managers that are listening to this, remember that some of this stuff takes a little bit of time. If you want it good. And I think that's all the time we have for this week, or at least that's all the content that we have. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Take care.